take it on down from Muscle Shoals through Decatur. Over Spanish Fort into Mobile, my hometown. Mr. T.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you very much for listening on this Friday morning. 251-343-0106. Real quick, we'll give you the rundown here. Coming up in about an hour, April Marie Fogle, Alabama Today, and News Talk 93.1 in Montgomery. Alabama political reporter Josh Moon will be with us. Josh and I get along real well. We're one of the few conservatives, but Josh, good writer, just brings a different perspective. But we'll talk Auburn when he comes on. And then finally, we'll wrap it all up with our returning champion, Chris Elliott, state senator from Daphne. So you want to stay tuned for that. But joining us now, very pleased to be joined by my next guest. Came in studio all the way for this show, and we're very, very appreciative of that. State Representative Chris Pringle on with us. Representative, good morning. How are you?
Morning. I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Hey, thanks for coming on. Before we jump into the discussion about redistricting, just tell us real quick, the session going pretty well?
Well, it's been interesting because, you know, we came in, then we recessed for a special. Now we're back. We're trying to work our way through getting bills ready to go to the floor for a vote.
Well, that's this seems like the sausage-making process seems to be moving along. At least that's my observation. Very frantic, very chaotic in the hallways there in the State House. But let's get you weigh in on obviously, the big story of the day, particularly as it pertains to your role as a chairman of the House Reapportionment Committee and these court decisions. Just kind of for our listeners, what we said here, lower court comes out, three-judge panel says the maps you guys drew in that special session last year for congressional districts don't really comply with the Voting Rights Act. You're going to have to go back and have a do-over. And then, lo and behold, here the Supreme Court says no, it's too close to the election, and we're going to stay that order. Your elections can proceed. That kind of a fair assessment of where we are.
That's yeah, it is. I mean, this is people have come up to me and said congratulations on winning, and I'm like, we didn't win. The lawsuits are still pending. There are actually four lawsuits pending right now. Three of them are challenging the congressional districts, and one's challenging the legislative districts, and they're all different. And this is what's kind of hard to wrap your head around. If they challenge you federally on the Voting Rights Act, it automatically goes to a single federal judge. If they challenge you on the Constitution, the 14th and 15th Amendments, then it automatically goes to a three-judge panel.
All right,
and so. Each one of the lawsuits has either a Section 2 violation of voting rights or the amendment. So we wound up with a three-judge federal panel. And basically what the Supreme Court ruled was we're too close to the elections. This is a very complicated issue. It's the courts have been very unclear as to what we can and cannot do. So what they said was, no, we're going to let those districts stand for this election while we continue to litigate all three of the congressional lawsuits.
And as far as I can tell, you guys, the parameters, the understanding, the assumptions that we operate off of, and we have in the last reapportionments, prior reapportionment efforts, you applied them to this process, and that's kind of this time around, it just didn't meet the billing of the courts.
The congressional plan that you, as you know it, is really kind of the Reed-Buskey plan that was implemented by the federal courts in 1992. And all we've done since then is just we've tweaked them based on the population shifts and made the districts zero deviation.
Right.
And our attorney is the same attorney the Democrats used when they were in the majority and they were drawing districts. So our guidelines have come from then. From the 90s forward, and all we do is adjust them based on new court rulings. So everything we did based on what the lawyers told us was legal in order to, you know.
And this is based on decades of case law.
Decades.
That this has been tried. How many times has, you know, other lawsuits have been tried?
Yes.
And this is where we are today.
Yes. And this three-judge panel has taken it. They have reinterpreted the Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act in a way that we never expected them to do it. They have now said that because there's 27% African American in the state of Alabama, they deserve a second district.
Right.
Just because of that. But Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, nothing in this section establishes a right to have a members of protected class elected in numbers equal to their proportion of the population. And now this court's told us we have to elect minorities in proportion to their population, even though the Section 2 clearly says nothing says they have to be elected in proportion.
And so it contradicts it there. Mm-hmm. Now, my understanding is when you draw these maps, when you draw these lines, race can't be a component. It's a partisan. You could do partisanship and base it off of the partisan lean of the locality, but not the racial component.
We turned off race on the computers when we were drawing the districts. And after we drew some preliminary districts, then we turned race on to see where we were, that we didn't diminish the ability of them to protect a class of minority citizens to elect a candidate of their choosing. Or, you know.
Right.
We were trying to, or inadvertently we did it. Then we turned it on and check and make sure. So when we turned it on, Terry Sewell had what we considered to be a safe district for her, and we were comfortable with that. And now they've come back, and the plans that I've seen, there are like 11 or 12 plans floating around in Montgomery right now, and it is I don't see how you can draw two minority districts. We've looked at it. We've had the best people we know draw maps, and the only way to do it is to racially gerrymander this state and start breaking up counties based on racial lines.
And we're told gerrymandering is taboo, it's bad, that to get to a two out of seven Democrat lean, you gotta – can you do it without race as a component, or does it – do you necessarily – I mean, what's to say that if I look at it and I'm colorblind and I say, well, we know this vote's Democrat, we know this vote's Democrat, could you do it that way – and not have it too out of line, too out of proportion?
I see no way to do it without making race the number one priority in drawing. Because the plans, I mean, basically, they're all looking fairly similar. They come into Mobile County. They take Washington County out of the first district. They come into Mobile County, and they surgically come down basically Highway 43.
Right.
They take Pritchard, and they take the city of Mobile. They leave Saraland and Criollo in the first district. They surgically pull out Pritchard and Mobile, and then they go all the way to the Georgia state line. Montgomery, they break West Montgomery into the minority district. East Montgomery, you know, Pike Road and East right. Montgomery and East Chase all stays in the third, goes into the third district. And they go to the Georgia line, and they come into Houston County, and they cut the northwest corner of Houston County out, where the majority-minority lives. I mean, it's clearly a racial gerrymander, almost every plan I've seen.
I mean, and the law just it states that you can't do that.
Exactly. And this, I mean, close your eyes. You're Congressman Jerry Carl.
Right.
You leave your house in West Mobile. You go down Airport Boulevard. The moment you hit the city line, city limits of Mobile, you're no longer in the 1st Congressional District. You drive all the way through the city of Mobile. You go through the tunnels. You get into Baldwin County. You're back in your district. Then you drive 3.5 hours through Florida, turn north to go into Dothan. Because all they want the bottom half of Mobile County, Baldwin County, Escambia, Covington County, Geneva County, and Houston County to be the 1st Congressional District. And, you know, I've sold timberland for 28 years. You can't get to Geneva County from Mobile, Alabama. I went there one time, and I walked in the office, looked at my boss, said, I'll never show land there again.
I have some friends, the youngest elected official in Alabama is a Geneva County commissioner. But anyway, I digress. That seems like that is a very good argument in a court, that you're going to have to say we're just following what the law says. Now, this lower court, this three-judge panel, my understanding, J-Town, who's the former the U.S. attorney for the Northern District, he kind of explained it this way, that the mental gymnastics at play here was this three-judge panel said you it can't be the law says it can't be the dominant factor, that you could still use race as a major factor, but it can't be the dominant factor. Is there any reason to think that that is a way to interpret the law?
I'm not an attorney, so I'd hate to answer that question. But having sat in the room and watched these maps being drawn for months, well, actually for years, I don't see there's any way of drawing the districts without making race the predominant overriding factor. And you still cannot get to two majority-minority districts. Even though this court ruled now that if you identify on the census as African-American and Asian-Pacific, we have to make you African-American for the purposes of BVAP.
Right.
So they've greatly expanded the definition of African-American to include biracial people, or just automatically are minorities. And you still can't get to it. And it jeopardizes Terry Sewell.
Well, she and now I don't know if this is how it works, but this is why I've been told that the congressional delegation will offer their presentation. They will offer a suggested map to your committee. And what they do, at least this is what I'm told, they give Terry Sewell the opportunity to draw her district first, and then the other six kind of come in and they look at it and they decide amongst each other how they're going to draw it. That she could stand to lose here if they were to split her district up.
Oh, yeah. There's one plan up that puts her in the same district as Gary Palmer.
Right.
And makes her district an open seat. And actually, they flip the first and second, and the second becomes the first becomes the second, and that majority-minority district through the Black Belt is also an open seat. There's no incumbent in the seventh or the new one.
Meanwhile, there is a – tell me this. The understanding here is that you avoid trying to put incumbent versus incumbent. Now, what kind of – like what guideline – what is the – is that just a preference, or is there actually something written that says try to avoid it if possible?
That's written into the guidelines of the committee, and it's been there since probably the 1990s at least.
And the court just said you need to forget about that. That's
just
not important.
One of our guidelines, yeah.
Right. Well, and so what's the danger here? If we get these districts like they want them, it seems to me that they're not sure things. They're not necessarily sure to accomplish what the goal is, which is to get two Democrats elected. That's particularly in an election cycle like this, Representative, where it appears it's going to be a red wave. Republican voters are very, very, very eager to get out to vote. They're not happy with what's going on in Washington, D.C. Democrat voter participation may be lower because of that. Just a natural cycle of politics here. If they go both Republican, retrogression, does that make you legally vulnerable if you go from six Republicans and one Democrat to seven Republicans, possibly?
You could have a retrogression issue, yes. And that's what we're talking about, is you cannot draw two majority-minority districts. One of them's only like – I've seen anywhere between 42% and 45%, and the other one's hovering right under 50% or maybe like 50.02. And if you get a wave election – you could wind up with seven Republican members.
And as far as I could tell, talking to the Republican Party chairman, it won't be like a situation where the 7th Congressional District is just not seen as winnable. They don't put a lot of resources backing one of their candidates there, Republican nominee. But he says if these lines were to come into play, that they're going to play in all seven districts to try to win. And that is, trying to do this, it's going to face additional headwinds because Republicans are going to see it as winnable.
Yeah. Well, of course, the Democrats have basically unlimited funds. I mean, these lawsuits are all being funded by outside sources. They've got hundreds of millions of dollars to litigate these cases, and they're doing it all over the country. I mean, this is not just Alabama. Eric Holder, which is interesting to me because Eric Holder, when he was the Attorney General, he approved our congressional plans. Under Section 5, he said they were constitutional. He left the Justice Department, went on the payroll of these nonprofits that are being funded by the Bitcoin billionaires out of the West Coast, Then he turns around and sued us under Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act and said it was discriminatory. Now, we won that, you know, that lawsuit got set aside, but, you know, he's backing with these other lawsuits, and they will spend whatever they think they need to spend to try and protect Terry Sewell. So, I mean, the Republicans can go after it, but remember, this game's going to be played on both sides of the aisle, and the Democrats will spend whatever they think they need to protect her.
Fair enough, but talk about that. There's a whole industry, if you will, that it exists for the sole purpose of challenging these maps apportioned by legislatures around the country, that this is something that there are foundations and you know, left-wing storefronts or whatever, that their sole purpose in life is to challenge what you guys do in the legislature.
Oh, yeah. Because, you know, you notice they haven't challenged us in state court. Because if you win in state court, you just win. But if you win in federal court, then the taxpayers have to pay you all your legal fees. And it's millions and millions and millions of dollars that the taxpayers wind up having to pay these attorneys who are backed by these foundations.
And this is just going to be a reality of the process. And you guys go into this process of drawing these maps knowing that you're working on that always, that is something you got to deal with.
Everything we did, I mean, they told us they were going to sue us before we even got started. And they said, we're going to sue you. So everything we did was designed to withstand a court challenge.
Hey, Representative, we're going to take a quick break here. Can you stick around for one more quick segment?
Yeah.
All right. Let's get a break in here. Guys, stay right here. Chris Prink, studio. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5.